Oh, hey, everybody. I didn't see you come in. Anyway, it is the Friday edition of the Damage Report, where I have Brett on the show. Not only on the show, but also before the show. But now we're on the show. So, Brett, now you can talk.
Oh, good, because no one heard us before. As soon as your show starts, by the way, I get every Slack message from your team. So it's the bane of my existence when I'm on the phone and TDR is like, I love you guys. We love each other. We're the best working team in the business. And it's just...
Yeah, they're way too nice. No, what I love is that like 30% of the audience doesn't yet know that we can be heard beforehand. Almost no one in the Slack knows that we know that we can be heard. Like, all the producers are like, oh my God, do they know that they're live? What are they going to say?
Do the two people most adept at, like, this program you're using know how it works? Yes.
We do. Thank you for your concern. I wish that I could know what they're afraid we might say, because that would say a lot. Maybe not about us, but about them.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything we say to each other that we would care people heard.
You never know.
Well, me, yeah. I'm a dear heart and you're a monster, so I guess that makes sense.
That is true. So we're going to be talking about monsters, you know, ways to kill them, like with Bleach. No, we're going to be talking about, obviously, I mean, what show do you think this is? We're going to be talking about that, reactions to it, Donald Trump's medical advice. Sorry, Dr. Donald Trump's medical advice. But we also have more. Food safety. It's a topic Brett and I talked about last week. Turns out things are moving quickly when it comes to meatpacking plants, industrial agriculture, and all of that stuff. So we're going to be giving our updates on that. And of course, it is Friday, so we're also going to have the Garbage People of the Week. And I think... sort of the rumblings I've heard on social media in the chat, this is a much anticipated Garbage People of the Week. So we'll see if we can deliver. I might have a little bit of a curveball, to use a sports metaphor for you. Do I get credit? Anyway. Okay. Thank you. Oh, Brett,
after
by the way.
He says curveball, he spikes the football on being a jock.
Exactly. No, I mean, look, if your curveball, you know, goes right between the uprights, then you deserve credit for it.
Go! So,
go, hockey team. So, Brett, before we jump into the stories, which we're going to do soon, before people start leaving, you filmed a new episode of Happy Half Hour, didn't you?
Yes, there is an episode of Happy Half Hour with myself and Anna Kasparian. I'll be less high this time than I was with John, but I will be more drunk. So we'll see what that trade-off is. We do a lot on the show, including going through Mark Meadows' advice for how to make a tuna melt.
Wow.
And it'll make you barf.
Oh my God.
It'll just make you barf. And then also I want to thank everybody who responded to my tweet asking to tell me something good. And your stuff's going to be on the show.
Ooh.
So if you follow me on Twitter, A, I feel better about myself, and B, you get to be part of this new media thing that's interactivity.
Awesome. That sounds fun. And let's talk about that here. You guys are here. Lots of you are in the chat. Maybe hit that like button. You know what? Maybe you haven't done it before. Maybe you've been nervous about what it could mean to hit the like button. But today, together, in solidarity, let's hit the like button. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do right now. I just hit my own like button.
John,
I like buttoned myself. You could do it too. It was fast. And you know what? You can do it again on Monday. It's not like a one-time thing. So don't worry. Anyway, do it. More people see this. And also, if you tweet us at hashtag TDR Live, if you send in super chats and some of the comments as well, we will be reading those. Producers who are probably incredibly frustrated with us right now are combing through all of that and pulling some stuff for us to read a little bit later on. But before we do that, let's talk about just about the most depressing news in quite a long time. This week has seen Fox News and Donald Trump mostly move on from promoting hydroxychloroquine as a cure-all for coronavirus. And we knew it would take some time for them to come up with something to replace it. Turns out, though, didn't take a lot of time and certainly didn't take a lot of thought.
So, supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light, and I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way. And I think you said you're going to test that, too. Sounds interesting.
We'll get the right folks who could.
Right. And then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number of the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're going to have to use medical doctors with. But it sounds interesting to me. So we'll see. But the whole concept of the light, the way it kills it in 1 minute, that's pretty powerful.
Did you ever wish that you could scream so loud that the universe ended?
You guys want to do some lines?
What was that?
Do some comet lines. I just set it up.
Just snort it. Cures, you know, cluster headaches, pretty much everything. Does a number on the brain.
All I got's Febreze, John. Mm-hmm. Does it respond to smells? Does it do smells?
It's not a cure, but it's a treatment. It's a treatment.
Yeah. This is what definitely goes in the lungs. It's an aerosol.
That's it.
There's a method to the madness. You can't see this, but this is method.
I can't really see. Just, my wife. Look, just basically, here's what I want you to do. I want you to put a blindfold on. I want you to root around like a truffle pig under your sink and just start drinking stuff. You know, what do you got to lose? It's not going to kill you or anything, according to the president.
There are so many. Like, that's what it is. It is at the point where it's like, if Trump asks you to jump off a bridge, would you do it? Because that he's pitching stupid ideas. There had to be a point along the way where he realized what he was saying was that you would inject disinfectant into your body.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. What obviously has happened, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, because otherwise I'll do that scream thing you were talking about. But essentially what it seems like happened was someone said, on surfaces, if you clean it with a disinfectant,
yeah,
it gets rid of it on surfaces. That's someone who's trying to cut down on the danger of contracting coronavirus in a public place.
Yes.
But Trump, just like, I remember when AIDS became a thing, so does Dr. Birx. She just said, don't have sex. And during I had this awesome idea, which is, what if we take all the blood out of people's body? I was six. Take the bad blood out and put new blood in. Uh-huh. Wouldn't that work? And that's essentially what Trump did.
No.
I think someone said all these things like, there's a disinfectant that works on surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, he was like, can we do that? And Dr. Birx was like, will it make you shut up if I say we'll look into it?
Yeah.
Because you're not stupid enough to say that on the podium, are you?
Brett, that's the thing. We know, if you look at enough fossils, you start to get the pattern there, okay? We know what is happening right now. We know what the response is going to be from everybody, the distractions, and we're going to get to that. But we also know what happened before, because the story always comes out 48 to 36 hours later. A source close to the president says that there had been a conversation where they tried to tell him not to do that. So he brought it up when he was being briefed. And they probably told him, well, no, that's not, we can't do that. And they probably thought, that's it. We're good. But you're not good, because it's Trump. And so he is not going to let something like his utter ignorance, not just on medical science, but apparently on what disinfectants are. Like, imagine him as a father. He has to protect his kids from consuming poisons. But he thinks maybe there's an upside to it in some ways.
That picture you just painted of Trump having anything to do with raising his own children, come on.
Yeah, that's true.
He never was in that position. Do you think Trump was ever at the park with Ivanka? Do you think he ever went to the park and sat there and had to watch the kids? Do you think Trump has ever watched the kids? No, someone else did that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want any of this anymore. It is such an assault on everything that I need to be true about the world, for every one of my hopes about the future to be true, he keeps reminding me that no, there are people this stupid. Our society elevates them in every area of our society. These are the people who will rule us. These are the people that will be given money and fame and prestige and all of that. The stupidest, most ignorant, most shameless people. And he's an example of that.
Yeah, I did a video on this as soon as it happened last night on the Young Turks Facebook page. And I pulled this quote from a Daily Beast article, because everyone right now is trying to write that article that you're saying. The article about what happened, sources close to the president. And this is my favorite paragraph from it. I pulled Bill Bryan, who leads the Science and Technology Directorate at the Department of Homeland Security, presented a, quote, emerging result from departmental research that suggested UV light, heat, and humidity are detrimental to COVID. It's an emerging result, right? So it already has been, if it was in any way promising, they would have called it a promising breakthrough, a groundbreaking discovery. But no, it's downgraded to emergency result, which is like the bottom of that totem pole.
Mm-hmm.
And then did it come from the National Institute of Health? Did it come from the CDC? Did it come from any epidemiologist? No, it came from the Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah.
You could tell they were in a circle and he was like, all right, hydroxychloroquine's out. I'm definitely not talking about that. So anybody got any idea, give me anything. Mm-hmm. I would be fine with sharks with lasers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And someone said, well, on surfaces, we can put UV light and shine it onto those surfaces in closed places. They're trying this on planes to disinfect it. Anyone who watches Naked and Afraid knows that some people are like, well, the top layer of water is probably clean because of the UV light.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly.
After that, he is then vamping on the national stage because he hasn't been able to program new material at his rallies. And unfortunately, he has a captive audience that's not just his psychophantic supporters. And when he says this, you could just tell that Burks is like, maybe if I don't move, he won't see me.
Exactly. Yeah. We're going to get to her response in a little bit, but we focus on the bleach part, the disinfectant part, basically like take a poison, inject it in your body. You idiot, you stupid, stupid idiot. How could you possibly think that? I haven't focused as much on the UV light thing because, like, trying to be fair, he doesn't know about disinfectants or injections or all of that. He is, however, a bit of an expert on the use of UV light on skin. But, it kills the virus, hypothetically, on a surface. That's great. It also does a lot of damage to other sorts of cells, other sorts of life forms as well. UV light can lead to cancer. All of this is wrong and all of this is stupid and he doesn't know about any of it, which is why he shouldn't be at these press conferences, let alone monopolizing the time. Dr. Burks, like, I don't like Dr. Burks. I don't even think she should be there, but at least a doctor should be there, someone who knows what they're talking about. There's no need for him to be there.
Well, the UV light thing, there is according to a Columbia report, there is a frequency, a type of UV light that is like a shorter wave or something. It's a more focused version that doesn't damage skin cells. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. But he doesn't know that for sure. Mm-hmm. And
well, really fast.
He just wants to shine. He went from what you said to shine light into people's bodies. Mm-hmm. So basically insert a probe that's like a disco ball of UV light.
Oh,
spin
I noticed
it around.
That. No, but hold on. So obviously that's the most ridiculous single part of it. But he said, let's put light on people's body, or let's put light into people's body, maybe by shining it through the skin. And I thought, that's the same thing as the light being outside of the body. I don't understand what the difference is there. That's the only, like, it hitting the skin is the outside part of it.
Is he, and like, then, picturing E.T.'s finger, like, from the inside? Exactly. You just shoot it through you.
I don't know.
But, like, there should be some kind of filter. Because the next step, I don't know, are we going to get into, like, how the White House is trying to spin it now?
Yeah, so Kayleigh McEnany put out a statement earlier today saying they're taking the president out of context. He's not saying you should inject with bleach. He's just saying doctors should look into whether you should inject with bleach. Oh, I feel much better. Much better.
I don't mean to brag, but when I got my car, it had a free year of Sirius XM radio.
Mm-hmm.
Which I kept. And there's all these ads for like aging middle-aged men, and it's non-FDA approved treatments, but yes. It's like Cremo Cream will clear up your entire body and it does wonders, and people in Australia believe that it's amazing and it's been used in caves for years. And after pitching you for a full minute on the medical advantages of using it, at the end of the commercial, it goes, this is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Yep, exactly.
And that's what this is. Yeah. And then you look at it and kind of go like, wait, why were you allowed to essentially promise me that this had medical benefits?
Yeah.
And then at the end, get out of jail free for just showing a disclaimer? That's played so quickly that like, and that's what Trump is relying on. And we can't let him do that.
We're trying not to let him. And one of the issues too, is that it's depressing, and depressing isn't a strong enough word. I need to find something stronger, because when I say depressing, I mean, makes me utterly lose faith in humanity, our leadership, myself, the future, the prospects for change, all of that, that he would believe these things and say these things. But we also know that many of his followers, their identity is the last stupid thing that Donald Trump said. So there are how many 45-year-old blonde women on Twitter who respond to every one of Trump's tweets, who every tweet now is going to be about how we should be allowed to inject ourselves with disinfectants. And it's not even new. The UV stuff, like, there have been grifters and conspiracy theorists since the beginning of the coronavirus that have been pushing this stuff. I don't know if he saw those and that's why he's suddenly bringing this up, but they have been trying to make money off of this from the very beginning, and I imagine that now is going to be 100 times bigger now that Donald Trump has given his stamp of approval.
When Trump was elected, none of us imagined that there would be a giant pandemic. But like, there would be criticism of any other presidential person in the presidency, Republican or Democrat, about their handling of an emergency like this. But no one would ever, no person, Republican or Democrat, would ever get this stupid. Mm-hmm. Like, Mitt Romney, if Lindsey Graham were president of the United States, it would not be this stupid. There are things that the dumbest of dumb politicians have never dared to say, because they know, like, all right, there's only so much, like Mitch McConnell, there's only so much spin I can do. I'm not going to try to get people to take, I'm not going to try to play with people's like sad, like, unfortunately, survivalist instinct to cling to any hope given to them.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take advantage of that by saying, someone said something about disinfectants and I think we should put it in the blood, so why don't you go try that? Like, my closest experience to that is like producers, is bad, bad producers who don't know what they want, and they show up and they just say, make it brighter, but like darker. So, I don't know, you go, I have another meeting, and then they leave. That's what our president is doing to us. Yeah. We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Bill says, Trump now saying he was being sarcastic. I haven't seen that yet.
No.
He was not being sarcastic.
That's I don't know what Googling Trump's sarcastic. Yeah, Trump tries to walk back speculation about injecting disinfectants, claiming he was being sarcastic.
Nope.
That's like, remember when Matt Gaetz was like, when I wore the gas mask, I was making fun of how serious it actually was, man. And it's like, no, you were making a joke. No one in this world should be able to like have a kid and believe that Trump was being sarcastic at that point.
He wasn't being sarcastic. Like we've seen him joke. We often disagree about whether a joke he's told is funny, but I can acknowledge when he's joking, he was not joking there. He's a joke. This whole thing is a joke, but he was not joking. That was not sarcasm.
Yeah.
That was the universe being sarcastic at us.
Inject disinfectant. Inject disinfectant. Inject disinfectant. Sarcastic. So this is a joke to you. So this is a joke.
Oh,
people are dying. People might die, so this is a joke to you.
Brett, that's 100% the response to what he just said. I don't even want to talk more about the sarcasm. It's just a lie. It's 100% a lie, but every Fox host will be saying, yeah, he was just being sarcastic. It was a joke. Why can't the left get comedy? Why can't they get that he was being funny? How many people died while he was doing that little sarcastic 59-second thing? A couple people, definitely.
Mark Grennan. Who is one of the people peddling the potentially lethal industrial bleach as a miracle cure. And apparently he told Trump that chlorine dioxide, a powerful bleach used in industrial processes such as textile manufacturing that can have fatal side effects when drunk, is, quote, a wonderful detox that can kill 99% of pathogens in the body. He added that it, quote, can rid the body of COVID-19. He wrote that letter to Trump a few days ago.
Wow. Oh, God. Now we know.
So the light thing came from the Department of Homeland Security. The chlorine thing came from someone selling chlorine. And this is after the death of that one guy and the hospitalization of the wife of him, of his wife, who saw hydroxychloroquine and decided to drink fish tank cleaner because it had chloroquine at the end of the chemical, and he died and she went to the hospital.
So following Donald Trump's inject bleach to get rid of COVID rant, we knew what was going to happen. People were going to start defending him. Obviously on the right, they were going to do that, but it isn't just on the right. Before we get to that though, I want to show you an instantaneous reaction. Often it's over minutes, hours, days. Here's a reaction as Donald Trump is going on his rant. Here's Dr. Bricks.
So supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light, and I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way. And I think you said you're going to test that too. Sounds interesting.
We'll get the right folks who could.
Right. And then I see the disinfectant, where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that?
Okay, that's depressing. We tried to lighten it up a bit. But anyway,
Dr. Birx was later found hanging from her decorative accessory scarf.
She like tries to just blank face stare at him, and then eventually she can't look at, like, she is taking a moment to say hello darkness my old friend effectively. Like, that's, she's a doctor. I agree with on a lot of things. She's gotten a lot of things wrong, but she believes that she believes in science.
During that, Trump clarified we should have medical doctors look at that.
Yeah.
Part where she's just,
if we can find
what other doctors would be your instinct to have look at that, doctor? No.
Yeah.
Dr. Detroit.
Dr. Doom.
Dr. Disrespect.
Dr. Evil's more of a cloning guy. He like smiles. The entire thing is a joke to him. We passed 50,000 deaths in the past day. We had another two-thirds of a 9/11 yesterday alone. And he's joking or serious, I don't know which is better, which is worse, about injecting disinfectants into your body. Gargling Pine Sol or something like that. And she has to serve him. She has to watch that.
She is our first, last, and only line of defense against the worst scum of the universe. Like, mm-hmm. That's who she is.
I guess.
Dr. Birx is the only... Fauci, yeah.
He's but better. Like,
Fauci, I don't know how he still has a job.
That's true.
He pushed out Dr. Bright, who was the vaccine guy who said, I'm not going to push your hydroxychloroquine nonsense, mm-hmm. allegedly. And then Dr. Birx, is the one who is essentially the Trump whisperer. Like, Fauci comes in and is like, no, that's not going to happen. Birx is the one who takes the science and translates it so that Trump's dumb brain can understand it. And she knows that that's an, I mean, it's, she seems to know. All of this is production because I don't know her at all. Like, mm-hmm. who is Dr. Birx? What's she like? We're taking the cues that Trump picked up on selecting her as the central casting, like, doctor who has good bedside manner.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she's not a psychiatrist. And Trump needs one of those.
That's true. I mean, can you imagine him confiding what he, like, doing self-reflection and analysis and then taking the advice of someone who became an expert by studying and practicing? No, like, part of that is possible.
What is the Sopranos analysis? Like, those scenes where Tony talks to a psychiatrist, what would it be like with Trump?
That's a good idea for a sketch at the very least.
Well, you're a narcissist. We know that to be true. Mm-hmm. But are you also psychotic?
I think you should set it up. I know who could play the psychologist. She's probably right off camera right now. Anyway, so that is Dr. Birx, who is questioning literally every decision she ever made in her life that brought her to this point. But you also have right-wing media. Now, as we go live, there hasn't been much time for it just yet, but we do have a little bit from Fox and Friends. Now, Ducey is the reasonable one, so he has to acknowledge on some level that this is crazy, but he also has to defend the president. So let's see him attempt to do both of those things.
I know some people online have made a big deal out of the president saying they're looking at light, whether it can do something for somebody on the outside of their body, inside the body, injections of disinfectants, which is poisonous.
So then he moves on to questioning Dr. Oz, who shouldn't be there, who never should have been there, but is definitely should not still be on the air. So he's like, some are making a big deal out of, well, it is poison. So yeah, that's true. Some are making a big deal out of it. You make big deals out of big deals.
When even the bootlicker is like, can I like get some kind of like mint spray to put on your boots because I can't handle this anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, that guy can't come up with one sentence. He knows he wants to start with take it out of context, but then he gets to the actual statement in context and there is nothing he can do about it.
Yeah.
He can't come up with something. So he has to say, which is poisonous. Now, if Trump had said, what Trump should have said, what any reasonable person would have said is, well, we're still looking on ways to cure this disease. Obviously, those are our priorities. In the meantime, we're looking at ways to make public spaces more safe and COVID resistant. And the ways that we are doing that is to find effective, fast-working disinfectants. And there is a potential use for a certain kind of ultraviolet light that within 1 minute will kill the virus when it's out on surfaces, making places less dangerous.
Yeah.
But he didn't say that. He said, this guy who's in charge of not just coordinating this response, but also the military of the United States of America is saying, maybe we should inject disinfectant into your body. That's what he said. And there's no getting away from it. And every time that people try to put that back in a different context that is flattering toward the president and sounds even remotely coherent, they fail. And it should he should be disqualified. He shouldn't be allowed to run next time.
Yeah. so you said there's no getting away from it. But what if there was? What if there was a way, Brett, that you could continue to be a media outlet and acknowledge that what he said, kind of crazy, but actually do more to defend the president than Steve Ducey just did in his first try? We have an example of that. Here is the initial tweet from the New York Times about the videos that you have now seen. At a White House briefing, President Trump theorized, dangerously, in the view of some experts, about the powers of sunlight, ultraviolet light, and household disinfectants to kill the coronavirus. Dangerous in the view of some experts.
And every expert.
Every expert. You can have read that entire tweet and have no idea that he said we maybe should be injecting those disinfectants into our body. They used all of the characters you can use in a tweet to misinform the public and defend the president during one of, let's say, the five craziest and dumbest and most ignorant and dangerous and consequential things that he said as president.
Right. New York Times, what's your job? It's to inform the public. And Trump has taken advantage of your misunderstanding of your initial calling to, in every possible way, get you to write that tweet so that someone who is looking to be informed isn't.
Yeah.
And you need to adapt your way of polishing his turds to make it so that you're actually doing what you are supposed to do, which is inform the public. The news you just put out is not fit to print.
No.
You need to reword that.
It's
like the last tweet they had about Biden, where like we could not find a pattern of misconduct except for in the same breath.
Yeah.
Like this pattern of misconduct.
Yeah.
Just say it a different way. Say it a different way. Say it accurately.
Either they're just bad at their jobs, or they're afraid of being attacked. I don't know. But these outlets that so many people rely on to get their news, not necessarily their analysis, but their news. How many times have I criticized the Twitter account of The Hill for just putting out a tweet that's a link to a story that probably has context in it, but the tweet is just President Trump said blank. And it's crazy or it's untrue, but they don't acknowledge it. And the 100 times as many people who will see the tweet as read the article will never know that truth. That is, whether it's intentional or not, and at a certain point, the difference becomes negligible. It doesn't matter. It's a philosophical thing. They are doing the work of propagandizing for the president. The New York Times is doing that. Now, I was angry at them initially. I woke up this morning and I said they need to retract this. They eventually did. Tweeting, we've deleted an earlier tweet and updated a sentence in our article that implied that only some experts view the ingestion of household disinfectants as dangerous. To be clear, there is no debate on the danger. And I looked at the timestamps of the reply and the initial thing, and while the condemnation of their tweet was instantaneous, it took them 11 and a half hours to retract it. A full night. And what percentage of people will see the retraction in comparison to saw the initial tweet?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know, because I think the kind of person who reads the New York Times, people who get the New York Times delivered, who knows? I think the politically active folks are overrepresented online when you relate that to like how many people there actually are, what our perception of how many people are really outraged and angry and all that reacting to this, especially in this time frame, is warped. But the next question is the people who do, like the folks you would would typically think are like the age where they would get the New York Times delivered, a lot of them are now getting their news on Facebook. Now, what news outlets, in giant quotation marks, what news outlets Facebook apparatus is the most effective at delivering it to them? It's not even the watered down, weird, contorted, convoluted New York Times nonsense tweet. It is someone who has no problem completely grossly misrepresenting the truth and presenting exactly what Kayleigh McEnany said directly to their face without even probably including the video, the source video, just saying everybody's freaking out, being unfair to Trump, and not really getting his full context. Here's Kayleigh McEnany to explain.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I saw in the chat someone was like, this channel should be called the Hate Trump Channel. I'm like, Okay, that's sort of, I think, a dumb, ignorant thing to say on most days. But today, on Bleach Day, you're here to say that we're wrong to be angry that the president is encouraging people to do... Like, you support the president. Okay, why are you chatting? Why aren't you off injecting Clorox into your body? That's what he wants you to do. Inject Clorox and then go out there and get infected with coronavirus. That is what he's been working to accomplish for literally months now.
It's that plus, like, I know there's a lot of people who are like, that's not really what the problem is, man. There's a lot of stuff that's actually the real problem. And it's like, yes, those things that you want me to focus on, I'm also focusing on. Those are also the real problem. But like, I remember when Trump got elected, and you hate when I talk about farts on the show, but I'm going to do it right now. He is a giant fart smell. And unfortunately, you're going to get used to it. You're going to get used to it. You are not going to realize that you are in a fart smelling room, and then and you need someone to walk into that room. And that's what I would like to do, is be the person who walks into your fart room and say, man, it smells like total farts in here. You've gone nose blind. Yeah. And if we stop doing that, then he's just going to keep farting in our faces. And that's the last time I'll say fart, besides this next one, fart.
Okay. And my response has been for the past couple of years to two responses. Well, probably 1,000, but I'll give two. Why are you focusing so much on Trump? One, because he has more individual political power than literally anyone else on the planet. And two, I worked as hard as literally anyone in terms of using my platform to stop him from getting that power. I was attacked constantly for focusing so much on the run-up to the 2016 election, on stopping him from getting that power. I would have loved to have had no reason whatsoever to cover him after November 6th or so for the last 3 years. I've had no reason to talk about him even once, and I tried to make that happen, but unfortunately, it didn't happen, so we're stuck with him and stuck with the consequences of him. And as we always say, elections have consequences. Yesterday, they had about 2,300 to 2,400 of them, just on coronavirus alone. And so we're going to continue to provide some oversight on them. Last week, we talked about the possibility that lowering regulations by the Trump administration on meatpacking plants and other large manufacturers of food, making it easier for diseases to spread in the future, that could lead to future coronaviruses. But perhaps we were looking too far into the future, because right now it's looking like this disease could continue to be spread as well as others because of those regulations that have already been changed. So plants are starting to close down because some of them are having waves of coronavirus cases. We've got an example of that. Last week, Smithfield shut down one of the largest pork plants in the country after hundreds of employees contracted the coronavirus. Hundreds! The plant in South Dakota, whose output represents 4-5% of U.S. pork production, is reported to be the largest single-source coronavirus hotspot in the U.S. with more than 600 cases. That is amazing. The conditions that would result in 600 employees at one place getting the disease, the idea that that wouldn't result in the disease being spread on anything that they were producing seems incomprehensible, Brett.
I think the very obvious solution to this is just put disinfectant in your meat.
Obviously. Like
when you get your food, you know how a lot of people, you can brine it to get it a little juicier. I say just like take a little bit of Comet and pop, pop, pop. Little salt, little pepper, little
peppercorns,
abrasive
maybe.
Blanqueador, bam, bam, bam.
Mm-hmm. You want to form a light crust over the pork.
Also, UV light is really effective on this. So if you're going to eat breakfast, why not do it on the surface of the sun?
I've heard rumors that the coronavirus can't survive on the surface of the sun. And look, just in case, Brett's being sarcastic, everybody. It's spread. Now, we've seen spreads of coronavirus in a lot of other workplaces because some of these companies, first of all, it's very easy to spread, but also many of these companies aren't doing what's necessary to protect their employees. And thankfully, there have been some politicians that have done a good job of pointing that out. But we are also worried about the fact that some of the food might be contaminated with it as well. And if it is, we know one reason why that's possible. That's because of the deregulation that's been done over the past 4 months or so by the Trump administration. They've been lobbied by the meat producers. They don't want to slow down the lines so that inspectors can take a look at all the food that they're putting out. And so they've been lobbying for speed increases, and they've gotten it. So the latest line speed increases mean 11 poultry plants have been given waivers to operate higher line speeds in the past fortnight. That is entirely during the pandemic. A number of beef and pork plants have also been given waivers. The move will allow the additional chicken factories to slaughter as many as 175 birds a minute, the equivalent of 3 per second. And it's not like they weren't already slaughtering a lot. Traditionally, it was 140 birds a minute, and 4 inspectors would be expected to look at 140 birds every minute. Now, it's 3 a second, and you have not 4 inspectors, you have 1 inspector. So each inspector is expected to notice the presence of trace amounts of fecal matter that could have disease in it on 3 birds every second. The sentence that I just said was dozens and dozens of birds long, effectively. How could they possibly catch these sorts of infections? And of course, they can't, and they won't, but the meatpacking plants don't care because they're going to be able to make more money by shipping out more birds in less time.
Right, and this is the central thrust, and thematically it's all linked, right? The moneyed interests who have sway in Washington, who can affect actual change, don't care about you. They're scientifically incompetent, and that's convenient because if they weren't scientifically incompetent, they would understand the actual consequences of their actions. And even in like a capitalist society, in a truly capitalist society, their logic is if we miss a certain amount of medical issues, people will die, and if our source causes people to die, then people will just find another source. And that is supply and demand and the market taking care of it. But that's not what happens in actuality. Every time these major companies fail, they don't have to pay the consequences. And the ability of the EPA, or whoever it is, the FDA, the regulating body, to turn a blind eye to this proves that. Mm-hmm. They're just like, yeah, whatever you need, always whatever you need. Yeah. Always whatever you need, because you are donating to my campaign. You are the ones that I actually care about. And when it comes to food safety, so the food you eat, and then testing certain drugs, the hydrochloroquine push by the president, and now this bleach push by the president that's only for political points, then they want you to be the guinea pig. They want you to suffer from it. Yeah. And then the mayor of Las Vegas saying – she literally said, I offered for Las Vegas to be essentially the guinea pig in seeing just how bad it would be if we let it go. She's not going to go out on the streets of Las Vegas. She's going to sit up in her own house.
Yeah.
With her husband, because she's just essentially royalty in Vegas because her husband was the mayor. Like, they don't have to incur any of the negative consequences. I'm going to talk about this later in the show too. In Garbage People, there are people that are willing to make you go out. You be the civil disobedient ones. You be the one who incurs all of the actual negative consequences of this, because if you do that, then I, the moneyed interest, have a better chance of making more money than I already have, which is historically at disproportionate levels to how it's been in the history of America.
Yeah. And look, everything that you're saying now is true, and we need to focus on it during this time too, especially because some of these regulation changes have, as we said, happened in the last fortnight. But many people in the chat are pointing out a lot of the issues that we're talking about were also present beforehand. And of course, that's true. And we've been talking about this for some time. It's just getting worse now because they continue to speed up the lines. They continue to strip away the inspectors. It has shocked me over the past few years how little public acknowledgement there is of, like we get some of the industries that have a lot of power and authority over politics, but like the food manufacturers are often given a pass on that. It's not just pharma, you know, it's not just the tech companies, it's not just the fossil fuel companies. Like, they have been so overwhelmingly powerful and successful in influencing government policy in regards to the food, the way it's produced, the way it's consumed, recommendations from the government. That goes back decades and decades and decades. And, you know, while we're right to point out the daily death toll from coronavirus, the daily death toll from diet-related chronic illnesses, that didn't just come from nowhere. That is affected by government policy. It's affected by these massive food manufacturers, both in meat and in other products as well.
And it's always a sweet, it's always an equilibrium that you have to find. Like, I am not for or against regulations. I am for good regulations and I'm against bad regulations. And that is inherent in progressivism. And it's ironic that food is where they're getting the laxest, because aside from shirtwaist factories, the jungle where they slaughter food was the beginning of the progressive movement in terms of common sense regulations that protect people from the atrocities committed by companies who rely on bailouts or just you dying to make a buck.
Yeah. Oh, God. I'll end with a positive note. I have been saying for a long time, and I get attacked every time I say it, but there are meat substitutes that I find to be just as good as actual meat, and I'm not a vegetarian. I do still eat meat, but I eat a lot less of it because of how good the substitutes have become. And lately, Beyond Sausage, it is more expensive than actual sausage, but it is, in most uses, just as good as the real thing, and consider it, because the sausage was never a very high quality product, and it is getting worse on a weekly basis.
Right. You don't want to see how the Beyond Sausage is made.
Yeah. It's the end of the week, and thus it's time to take out the trash. This is the Garbage People of the Week. Brett, you're here. Each week, we choose one person to hold up as an example of fine trash in America. We didn't talk about who should go first. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first.
Okay.
Mine is Stephen Moore.
Yeah, what did he do?
Stephen Moore is one of Trump's economic advisors. And recently, he has basically been the guy who has done some pretty terrible metaphors, equivalencies in all of this. I just want to play one video first about how he has spoken about how he is one of the guys who is encouraging people to do civil disobedience, aka all these coronavirus protests.
Yeah.
And here is just one little insane moment when I think he told Lou Dobbs or someone else, like Hugh Hewitt or something, about his plan for encouraging people to go do coronavirus protests.
The owner in Wisconsin, I'm not going to mention his name, and I told him about this. He said, "Steve, I promise I will pay the bail and legal fees for anyone who gets arrested." So this is a great time, gentlemen and ladies, for civil disobedience. We need to be the Rosa Parks here.
So, Stephen Moore, who is the worst. Stephen Moore's the worst. He's one of those Republicans who back in the day would go on like the Bill Maher show and just embarrass himself because he gets all giggly and thinks he's hilarious and thinks he's funny, but he is the kind of like irksome, terrible, because he's so detached from what other people are doing. What he's saying there is, first, a Wisconsin donor will pay your bail fees if you get arrested doing civil disobedience. Will that Wisconsin donor pay your hospital bills if you contract coronavirus out there? Will they pay the hospital bills of the people you get sick in the meantime by going to a large group and then being put in holding with another large group? Are you going to be responsible for it? That donor is obviously a big business interest in Wisconsin, and so that person is the one who wants to reopen the economy and get people back in the workplace so that they can make money. At the same time, succeeding in getting to the president who said that they are trying to lower and absolve companies of legal responsibility from getting sued if their employees who are brought back too early end up getting sick.
Yeah.
So all of this is connected. So that's one thing. That is the less obvious stuff. The most obvious thing is the audacity, the utter craziness and tone-deaf nature of this guy who is trying to benefit moneyed interests, comparing himself and all those people to Rosa Parks. And it's not the only one. Yesterday on Main Show, there was a protester out there saying, "Forcing me to stay home is slavery."
Oh, I saw that too. So Brett, question. Did he just in the moment come up with the analogy to Rosa Parks?
No. He also said on in a recent interview, I think with the New York Times, he said, yes, in a Q&A, he says, I'm just thinking this morning, and this is kind of a thought experiment because I was thinking about this. Why don't we just put everybody in a space outfit or something like that? No, seriously. I mean, we don't have space outfits. I mean, just thinking out loud, maybe this is a crazy idea. Yeah, it is. And you're trying to undercut it. You're trying to undercut it. How many thousands, tens of thousands of people have died in America and how much worse we are at this than other people.
Yeah. 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 He said, you know, if that's what it takes to get workers back to work, we'll spend $3 trillion on spacesuits. Just put them all in spacesuits. Let's bolt them. I think was it Stephen Moore who was also like they should just stay at their post. We should get rid of the common rooms and the lunchrooms. I forget exactly if it was him, but it's the same idea. It's, I need you cogs in my machine to go back to work. And if you have to be 100% inconvenienced, probably still get sick and die, uncomfortable, all of that stuff, that's what's going to be necessary. And eventually they're going to propose cutting pay as well, cutting the minimum wage. That's coming. I don't know exactly when. He is perhaps the least sophisticated of the you need to die for my 401k crowd, I would
say. Right. And all those hard-fought wins that progressives and, like, especially the big factory union movement have succeeded in securing is all the stuff that they're trying to undercut. The state pensions that Mitch McConnell is hinting that he really wants the states to be able to declare bankruptcy so they don't have to pay their workers their retirement pensions?
Yeah.
That's what McConnell wants to do. He wants to cut them loose because you know what the first thing they did was? To give big handouts to giant corporations. And now they want to take the people. He wants the mailman. He wants everybody who works in a government office, people who have good paying, decent jobs. He thinks that that's a sin. He thinks that's a forgivable aspect is he wants to forgive states from agreeing to pay people a decent wage and secure their future.
Yeah.
Now, along the way, by the way, like the fact that there is any money left in any pension accounts is a miracle because of how the financial markets have gamed all of those and over leveraged them within an inch of their life.
Long before this.
Yeah. Long before this.
So for my garbage person of the week, we turn to someone who you might not have been thinking about for this, but I am going to bring up this person, Larry Summers. Wait, Larry Summers? I mean, he hasn't been involved with coronavirus lately and all that stuff, so why is he being balled up? Why is he being thrown in the trash? Well, he's not necessarily the garbage person of the week for stuff that he did just this week, although he is in the news this week, and that is because he is providing economic advice and analysis for Joe Biden. And so, if Joe Biden ends up winning, Larry Summers might end up being a part of his administration. And look, we've done in the past on TYT for years and years and years has done analysis of Larry Summers and all the bad things he's done and thus what he would represent coming back to the administration. I'm just going to jump through a couple of the initial issues that you should have with Larry Summers. So one is Summers was the first name on the Biden do not reappoint list published last month by the American Prospect's Robert Kuttner, who wrote that Summers in 2009, quote, not only lowballed the necessary economic stimulus and ended it prematurely, but he successfully fought for rescuing the biggest banks rather than taking them into temporary receivership. We went back and found Naomi Klein. She had written in 2009 an article for Washington Post titled Why We Should Banish Larry Summers from Public Life. You should go read it. I'm just going to read one bit from it. She said, he has been spectacularly wrong again and again. He was wrong about not regulating derivatives, wrong when he helped kill Depression-era banking laws, turning banks into too-big-to-fail welfare monsters, and as he helps devise ever more complex tricks and spends ever more taxpayer dollars to keep the financial casino running, he remains wrong today. Let's also not forget, hey, here's a picture of Larry Summers, currently advising the Biden campaign at Jeffrey Epstein's residence in 2011, 3 years after Epstein was convicted of raping children. Now, he's not the only famous person there. See if you can spot another one. But anyway, Larry Summers,
Billy,
one of the many people hanging out with Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein's issues do go back a long way, but so do Larry Summers. So I want to take you back to Let's see. Oh, here's a random quote. One of the reasons that inequality has probably gone up in our society is that people are being treated closer to the way that they're supposed to be treated. There's a guy with some empathy that's advising potentially the next president. Back in 1991, he had this memo. Now, I know that you can't read that. It is about the economic incentives to dump toxic waste in Africa and other less developed countries around the world. Not going to read the entire thing for you, but here's a nice little tidbit. The economic logic behind dumping a load of toxic waste, that's his wording, a load of toxic waste in the lowest wage country is impeccable. I've always thought that underpopulated countries in Africa are vastly underpolluted. Only the lamentable facts that so much pollution is generated by non-tradable industries and that the unit transport costs of solid waste are so high prevent world welfare-enhancing trade in air pollution and waste. So the lamentable fact is it's just too costly to take all of our toxic waste and dump it in Africa, a place that I consider to be underpolluted. That's Larry Summers, who has been wrong and awful and awfully wrong and wrong in the ways that he's awful for decade after decade after decade. He has had more articles written banishing him than anyone else I've seen, and he's advising Joe Biden right now. So he's a garbage person right now. He's a garbage person yesterday and last year, and he looks like he's going to continue to be a garbage person in a position of power if Joe Biden wins.
That's a great one. I hadn't seen that thing, but like everything about that is everything wrong with what like an economist or a self-professed like economic actor needs to go through in order to arrive at the solution that like you probably should just dump your waste on Africa. Like why? I wish you hadn't shown your work. I wish you just would have said I don't need to do it.
No, I read two sentences. It's all over the place. Like, you can find more if you want. And so, look, thankfully, there are good people who are responding quickly to this. The Justice Democrats and Sunrise Movement are calling for Biden to remove Larry Summers as an economic advisor. I don't know if there's already a hashtag, so I'm going to suggest hashtag ban Larry Summers. I would love to see that trending. And I know that this isn't the sexiest pick or whatever, but I'm really worried that this is the sort of news that's going to sort of slip through the cracks. But he is exactly the sort of person that should be nowhere near a future Democratic administration. Now, that was my pick, and you had Brett's pick, but we also polled all of you, as we always do, on the community tab of the Damage Report channel. We gave you possible garbage people after getting suggestions from you on Twitter. You all chose Vegas Mayor Carolyn Goodman, got 55% of the vote. That's with nearly 4,000 votes there. Brian Kemp was a runner-up. You also see a good bit for Ron DeSantis there. And look, it's not a perfect segment because she would have probably been my pick if we hadn't already done an exhaustive thing about her yesterday. So
yeah, I always kind of go through the TDR YouTube page to see like if I missed something that you did.
I know it's and that's why I want to have a time when we're done with our picks to acknowledge other like she's the perfect sort of person for garbage people. She just happened to be awful on Wednesday night rather than Thursday night. As the most recent economic response bill was being debated, the members of the squad took to the House floor, and each of them were given just 30 seconds. But in that time, they did more to advocate for those who are truly being hurt worst by this crisis than basically everyone in a position of direct authority over the response. Here are some of the highlights of what they had to say.
And on behalf of my constituents in the Bronx and Queens, New York's 14th Congressional District, the most impacted district in America, calling people, losing their families every day, it is a joke when Republicans say that they have urgency around this bill. The only folks that they have urgency around are folks like Ruth's Chris Steakhouse and Shake Shack. Those are the people getting assistance in this bill. You are not trying to fix this bill for mom and pops. And we have to fight to fund hospitals, fighting to fund testing. That is what we're fighting for in this bill. It is unconscionable. If you had urgency, you would legislate like rent was due on May 1st and make sure that we include rent and mortgage relief for our constituents. Thank you very much.
Families are in crisis. Food pantry lines around the block. Rent is due again in 8 days. The community health centers and hospital workers in my district are desperate. This is a crisis within a crisis, exacerbating every inequity that already existed. This chamber will determine how many more lives we are robbed ashamed of. Now is not the time for back paths. Our nation is crying out. The people are crying out, and we must answer their cries in the CARES 4 package with a bill that puts the...
It's indefensible for us not to support to replenish the PPP. But it's also indefensible for us not to focus on replenishing the coffers of Americans and focus on making sure they are able to support paying their rent, making sure that our cities and states are not going bankrupt, and making sure American families are not dying of hunger.
Madam Speaker, this bill is only necessary because in the last bill, Republicans prioritized a $500 billion gift to corporations that turned around and laid off workers who bailed them out. Our people need us to prioritize public health and testing, and they need reoccurring monthly relief payments now. This is Skylar Herbert. You need to see her face because there needs to be a human face to this pandemic. She's 5 years old, died from coronavirus. Skylar loved dressing up and performing, and she loved and adored being in kindergarten. Her death should be a wake-up call that we must act in urgency. Her father, a firefighter. Her mother, a police officer. First responders. And the amount of guilt that they feel because maybe they didn't have access to testing, and that's exactly why they're out there telling her story every single day. Please, let's act now in urgency.
Okay, I'm not going to lie to you. Even right now, but especially the first time that I saw Rashida Tlaib pointing out Skylar's picture, it kills me. It devastates me. And it's a reminder, like, I've tried every day, even depressingly so, to take stock of the toll that this crisis and the crises that the crisis are causing are, having on America. But those numbers, again, as we always say, like, if 2,400 people died last year, that's 2,400 tragedies, 2,400 stories, 2,400 families and sets of friends. And that was just one picture, and it just kills you. And to know that there are so many more, even right now, as we're filming this, more that did not need to die. And so I am so glad that Rashida Tlaib, and you can hear in her voice how much she cares about these people and how hard she's fighting to try to help them. But all the rest as well, they were all great. Ayanna Pressley was great. And AOC, like, they've been very consistent. I understand the response will be, oh, but they did this thing that I don't like. Yes, and we should be critical of them as well. We should hold them accountable as well. But my job is not to grind up everyone who advocates for my values and my positions and try to convert them into you liking me more because I say that I'm superior to them and I make you feel superior to them. They are advocating for the right policies. They are advocating with passion, making clear their values and hopefully inspiring more people to support those values and those policies. And I think that we are so lucky to have them. And I can't believe that just a few years ago, we didn't have any of them. And I hope that we have a lot more in the future. I hope that there are people out there right now, and, you know, we've tried to show you through interviews with these candidates, the right people that need to join them. Maybe some of you watching right now will run someday and provide more support to these politicians who really do have our back. I could both talk for a lot longer about it, and I could say nothing because, you know, when you watched each of them speaking, what you felt, it's what I feel. And it feels good to have someone there expressing the same sort of frustration and rage over the way that this crisis has been botched, both before it hit, during, and up until and including today. And so thank you to all the representatives in that video for doing your job. I wish that there were hundreds more like you. There should be. It's what we need. It's what I feel like we deserve. We are in a time when, thanks to the coronavirus, primary elections have largely been postponed or at least radically changed, and we still don't know exactly what we can expect between now and the national election. Will we see a massive rise in vote by mail, a delay of the election? These are all things that people are worried about, that I am worried about, and so we've decided to bring on an expert to talk about these topics, as well as a recent article that he wrote. And so we are joined once again by author and campaigns manager for Equal Citizens, Adam Eichen. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me again, John.
Very glad to have you on. And so, look, I've been reading your recent work, and among other things, you've been talking about sort of what role the media can play in making sure that we move in the right direction for elections and that people stay up to date with the knowledge that they need to know. So what are some of the things that you think that the media should be doing?
Well, there's no question that we're going to be moving to elections where significantly more people will be voting by mail. That's pretty much a fact. I mean, whether it's in the upcoming primaries or in the general election, it seems like even if hopefully the coronavirus pandemic lessens during that time and there's less of a public health risk, I don't think people are going to be super eager to be voting in person. And so, you know, a lot of states are currently moving their laws to ease absentee ballot requirements, which is a really great step. Not all states, but a lot of states are moving in the right direction. And so one of the good thing, again, is that states are acting. A potential bad thing is that election laws are changing so quickly, it's very difficult for people to keep up with what's happening. Yeah. And that's why it's so critical that the fourth estate, the ones who are surveying all this information, are providing citizens with the necessary up-to-date information, you know, both as quickly and in a consistent fashion through the course of the election, so that they know what to do when it comes to actually casting a ballot. But not only casting a ballot, but actually requesting an absentee ballot, how to register to vote, what the registration deadlines are for registering to vote. You know, there's a whole slew of things that are going to be you know, normally done by third parties or other organizations that, you know, is going to be disrupted by the coronavirus. And so it's it's ever more important now that the media play a role.
Well, and we want to reassure people that we are going to be linking in the description of this video a link to vote.org where you can find out, among other things, voting procedures for each state. You can find out absentee ballot procedures, check your registration, find out about different deadlines, including for registration, find out if your state offers online registration, how to submit your ballot, these sorts of things. But you also have talked about one way that newspapers can play an important role in this process going forward, too.
Right. And so this is such a, I think, brilliant idea. And it was spurred by the actions of a small paper in upstate New York, the Ithaca Times, in 2018. Kentucky law professor and I, Josh Douglas and I, wrote an article for The Washington Post in 2018 calling on states to, or newspapers and states across the country, to, on their front page, print a full voter registration form that any recipient could cut out, fill out, and send to the Board of Elections where applicable. We would love to see this idea spread now, especially. Josh Douglas and I wrote this article in Talking Points Memo arguing the same thing, that newspapers right now can do that. You know, one of the scary things, John, is that, you know, most people are registered, you know, in normal times, register to vote through the DMV or through voter registration drives by the League of Women Voters, for example. These things can't happen right now. And so there's going to be a huge registration crisis unless we figure out ways, creative ways, to get people registration forms. And so newspapers, you know, have access to, you know, sending people things directly to their homes. States aren't going to mail out registration forms because that's one thing states could do, right? A great idea is that, you know, the state of Massachusetts could send out a registration form to every unregistered voter. They could do that. The federal government could do that. But until they do, why not have newspapers send out registration forms with their weekly, you know, their Sunday edition? And that way, when people open up the newspaper, they see a registration form and they say, oh, I'm not registered. I should register to vote. Yeah. Or it's printed on the front page. Or, you know, there's so many different creative ways. And I have to say, just in addition to this, it's not just the registration form. As I said, it's also the absentee, you know, maybe they don't send an absentee request form, but they certainly tell readers and subscribers. And it's not just newspapers. It can be online media outlets as well. And they provide a link to this, but some sort of information about what the deadline to request an absentee ballot is and how to request an absentee ballot. And this is critical, John. Not only that, but what are the best practices to make sure that your absentee ballot is accepted once you submit it? Because as we know from 2018, there are a lot of states that are pretty regressive in terms of the you know, how they disenfranchise voters once they actually cast an absentee ballot. And so this is all something within the purview of, you know, media organizations. And I should say, and maybe this, this may be controversial, but, you know, cable news and even local television news programs have to step up as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no reason why they can't, you know, bring on experts to talk about how to request an absentee ballot, why it's so critical, and to send people, as you're doing, which is, I think, really commendable, to a place like vote.org, where they have compiled all of the necessary information to participate in elections in the age of COVID.
You know, and it seems like a great idea, and as you, it seems obviously important that, especially considering a lot of the uncertainty that's out there, that people have this information now. But as you point out, our concerns around a number of different aspects of the voting process, registration, absentee ballots, all of that, didn't start with coronavirus. So it would be nice if we could also use this opportunity to fix some of the problems that we had going into this crisis. And I think that a lot of your advice would help in that. So one other thing that I want to talk about too, though, is clearly the most important thing is making sure that people can actually vote without exposing themselves to coronavirus and their vote can be counted. But we are also concerned about the perceived legitimacy of the election. And I'm curious, you know, if we follow some of the advice that you and others have suggested, if we don't, what are your overall like level of confidence of whether there will be a sense of legitimacy in the end for a national election that might occur during a pandemic like this?
Well, I think the first part of the, you know, any sort of response is that it's not too late to act to ensure an election that is safe with maximum participation. Congress could act right now. The Democrats could hold a red line that says no future stimulus money without strong protections for our democracy. That means, you know, the Brennan Center for Justice, for example, estimate that at least $2 billion is needed to make sure that our elections are crisis proof. Congress must allocate that money. It's really not a question of if, they must do that. And as well as ensuring things with a mandate of early voting, no excuse absentee balloting, online voter registration, you know, the list goes on. We know exactly what to do. And where Congress doesn't act, states have to act, right? Mm-hmm. If Congress doesn't step up, then we have to be pushing our state officials to pass the necessary reforms to hold an election. But again, we know what to do, John. I mean, this is the almost frustrating part. We know that we need to expand no excuse absentee balloting. We know there needs to be a robust early vote period, because here's the thing, we can't just have an all mailing ballot, because we know that that's going to disenfranchise certain communities. Yeah. So we have to have limited in-person voting too, with strong early voting. And so these are things that we have to push to push our state lawmakers to act. And if we do that, our elections can proceed. It'll be disrupted, but we can hold a strong election. And if we don't, you know, look no further than Wisconsin a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
We can see what happens when we don't adequately prepare. And there's not necessarily, you know, the actors, the state, you know, the election clerks weren't acting nefariously when they weren't able to get some of the absentee, you know, ballots out. It's just they were completely overworked, because what they didn't do is they didn't prepare enough. So that, you know, when the number of people requesting absentee ballots, you know, exponentially grew, they just didn't have the capacity to do it. And so the key thing is, I know it's so hard given all of the awful things going on, but just because the elections are a couple months away doesn't mean we can put this, you know, kick the can down the road. We have to start preparing now.
Yeah.
That's why Congress, the Democrats in Congress, have to hold firm when it comes to no stimulus without strong election protections, because you're right that ultimately we don't want to be in a situation where the legitimacy of the November election is called into question, because that's preventable. That's totally preventable if we act now. And so it's up to all of us, both in the media, activists on the ground, and just ordinary citizens, to make sure we actually push Congress and hold Democrats to the fire to say, you've got to hold firm on this. Yeah. And of course, Republicans too.
Exactly. And the pressure needs to be put on them to do the right thing, because many of the reforms that you've talked about, they have already come out strongly against, and Donald Trump seems predisposed against them, but that doesn't mean that they can't be pushed. And you're right to point out that, like, Wisconsin, maybe they can plead a little bit of, you know, ignorance, or the coronavirus was new enough that they couldn't adapt quickly. But nationally, that excuse is not acceptable. We have literally months to go. These changes are big. They're going to require a lot of effort and a lot of money, but we have more than enough time. And if we value our democracy, we can 100% get it done. And so, thank you for continuing to advocate for some of these changes that are so needed. And we appreciate the work that you continue to do. And everyone at home, by the way, again, the link in the description to vote.org, much of the information that you need to know will be there, but continue to stay invested in this entire thing. And Adam, thank you again.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.